path in autumn. Scarcely has it been swept clear when it's once more covered with dry leaves.
Thank you. Fat Black Plastic people, thanks for listening. Support the station. Support your community. Do the right thing.
Scopia. Updated every 3 parsecs. TimsTesseract.com.
TimsTesseract.com.
So you want to be a comic? It's not as easy as we make it look. But that's because Mutiny Radio has 8 hours a week of open mic stage time for all your comedy workout needs. Strain those improv muscles every Sunday from 4 to 6 at Getting Sketchy with David Stolowitz. Press out those new jokes every Monday, 6 to 8 on Joke Workshop.
Birds, right? Where, on the other hand, geese... Right, their only crime equally as mean
in San Francisco. Spark welcomes you to visit its 2 great locations as a medical patient or for recreational adult use in 2018. Spark is located at 1256 Mission Street between 8th and 9th and at 473 Haight Street at Fillmore. Both locations are open until 10 p.m. every night. Spark staff looks forward to serving you. Coming at these bitches and all these snitches, hitting switches, going rags to riches.
Rainbow Grocery, a worker-owned and operated food cooperative located at 1745 Folsom Street in the Mission District of San Francisco. Let's hear what locals have to say about Rainbow Grocery.
Their bulk section is dope AF.
I love their variety.
It's 2 o'clock on a Wednesday. When you hear the trippy music, you know what time it is here on Mutiny Radio. It's time for Some Call Me Tim. All right. Welcome to Some Call Me Tim. Today is 4:18 to timestamp it for you peeps. 4:18. It's almost 4:20. We have Juwan Rubin on the program today talk about what's going on. Juwan, I haven't met you before, but we have friends in common, so I trust that you are. If you want to listen, you can. It doesn't matter. I can hear the trippy music behind us.
Nice.
Yeah, we've never met before.
We've never met before.
Yeah. So
but
I don't
you
know.
Saw the
I
didn't post.
Know, saw the post on Facebook on Bacon. Bacon is. I don't want to tell too many people about Bacon because I like to keep it as exclusive as possible.
The 7,500 people that are part of Bacon. Yeah, it's super exclusive.
A lot of fucking people. Yeah. And then there's also, there's a Google Doc of all the different shows in the area. So if you're a comedian and you want to know what's going on, then go to Bacon and find out, you know, if there's an open mic near you. So, yeah, I saw your post and... Yeah, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm down to do a little bit of radio or whatever we got going on here. I guess there's a podcast and all that.
Yeah, we're not terrestrial, but we are on the internet. So, so on this show, the first thing I usually have you do is look deep into the eyes of Sparkle Jesus.
All right.
And I ask, do you believe in Jesus?
Do I believe in Jesus? I believe there was a man historically named Jesus who came from Nazareth. That's historical. That's in that's in his history books. As far as everything that goes on in the Bible, I also believe that as well.
Really?
Yes, I do believe everything that was going on in the Bible.
Like Noah and the Ark and
yes.
Jonah and the whale.
All that.
All right.
And so, just to preface this, I am actually a minister.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So this conversation will be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I used to be a religious zealot.
What does that mean?
I was one of the kids. I was on fire for Jesus as a child.
Oh, like, you're a Jesus freak.
I was a Jesus freak. I went to Christian school. I was all about my 33-year-old invisible friend that I got to talk to all the time.
Nice.
Solving all my problems.
Nice.
But I was in a Christian school for kindergarten through 7th grade and really involved in the church until college. So
okay,
I
what
know
happened
the
in college?
Stories. Well, yeah. So what happened was we
got
had
turned
a,
out. Huh?
Well, we had a big. We had a. And I was. No, I was a virgin until I got married.
Okay.
I mean, I was very like I didn't want anybody to see me naked. That was weird. Jesus shamed me into not getting an STD. Thanks, Jesus. High five. It's great. But we had a mega church kind of in a very rich town, and our pastor, who we revered and thought was this amazing person, he basically was sleeping with all the women that he was having one-on-one counseling with.
Wow.
And so he would be on the pulpit and he would talk about his 3 children and his wife and how much he loved them and all this stuff. And then he was having sex with, like, they didn't know if it was between 9 and 18 women.
Wow.
Who were all, and he was like saying, he was sort of using God as a way to get them to do it. Like, I have to help. I'm the go-between between you and God. And it was
gross.
Kind of like, right, terrible, right? So when that happened, like, my whole world just shat. I was like, everything I believe in is lies.
Wow, it took us one guy having maybe halfway consensual sex with 18 women.
Right. And it was like, but it was that I had been taught to revere this person, right? Like, and so it just, for me, that was rough.
Yikes. I'm so sorry that had to happen to you, you know?
I mean, it was, but I'm much better as like a crazy feminist than I was as a religious zealot. I was annoying. I was like one of those, like, walk up to you in the mall and be like, is your life going to be, are you going to be saved by Jesus Christ? Like, is everything going to be okay with you? Like, I'm worried about you and I don't want you to go to hell. And so for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son, and we should talk. And people are like, whoa,
yeah.
On fire for Christ. Get out of here.
Nice, nice.
But that was, you know, I don't do that anymore.
You don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. So that was the defining moment for you. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what do you want to know?
What makes you, you believe that like God exists and has a plan for your life and that
yes.
You're a tool in his toolkit? Like,
sure.
I want to know what, like, how you...
Well, so, let's start at the very beginning.
Okay.
So the very beginning, in the beginning, you know, God made heaven and the earth. So we have to define who God is first. So I think what happens is a lot of people... So let's go a little bit further back. So Plato, right?
Uh-huh.
Plato was a philosopher, the founder of all science, really, right now, right? And what he said was that the word doesn't matter. It's not the word that matters. It's the idea behind the word that's real. The words aren't real. Words are the way that we communicate with each other. But the idea. So if I say the word chair, you might think of something that has a back with 4 legs. Right? But a horse also has a back with 4 legs, right?
Right.
So it's really what goes into your mind. And so what happened was, now fast forward, Hollywood basically gave us images of who God is. Because in the Bible it says no one has ever seen the face of God. Nobody has.
Right.
Right? Moses saw a burning bush. A couple other people saw visions or whatnot. But no one's ever seen the face of God. No living person. And so... when you think of the idea of God, Hollywood has kind of painted him as this big, you know, white guy with gray hair in the sky.
Right.
Right.
The Zeus kind of thing.
Yeah.
The
so
Zeusian God.
I think that's kind of where it came from. Right. Is they try to, you know, make it make sense. But really, if you the idea of God is that he's omnipresent. He's everything. Everything is God. Me, I'm God. You're God. This, you know, the walls are God. Everything is God. Right. And so. From there,
the space between atoms.
Right. The space between atoms.
Because, like, that's the weird thing is you're sitting in a chair.
Right.
But that chair is basically a bunch of empty space.
Right.
Because if you look on the, you know, cellular level and atomic level,
right,
there's all this space in between these things that are moving around, yet that's a chair.
Definitely.
So it's like the space.
Yeah, right. And I have a book on my website, JuanRubin.com. So in my book, I talk about this, where it's that God is just a life force, and you can call it whatever you want. I may call it God, you may call it God, somebody else might call it the force, somebody else might call it Mother Nature, someone else might call
fate.
It Allah, you know, fate, you know, whatever. These are just words that we attach to the idea.
Now, this is a technical question, but in Revelations, John, in his visions, never saw God. He saw the beast with the six. No. He saw the headed things. He saw crazy stuff, a frog or something. But
and it's funny.
No face of God.
You know, I don't know. You might want to Google this, but a lot of ministers don't preach on Revelations because John the Revelator, he got banned, right? And he was on this island by himself with his servant. So he technically didn't write Revelations. His servant did.
Huh.
And he secluded himself in a cave with a bunch of incense and other things going on. And that's how he told his servant to write Revelations. So a lot of ministers don't preach out of Revelations. Some do, but not a lot of them do, because technically John was high.
He was high, yeah. He was smoking that cave fungus. Some weird cave fungus that has like
PCP. That's how he saw the visions. Yeah.
Sure. Well, and they say that when people try to scientifically reconstruct some of the miracles, and now with the legalization of marijuana, what a miracle. But they say that cannabinoids and cannabis were grown at that point.
Right.
And when the Jewish priests, they would be anointed, they weren't just like anointed with oil, like hit a little on your head.
Right.
They were like physically dipped in these huge vats of oil that had like all of these herbs and things going on, and like probably cannabis.
Yeah, yeah.
And so because India was right there.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that was growing around. I mean, things moved around. We know that there were trading routes and whatnot.
Yeah.
But so they'd literally like anoint them. And so they'd have visions.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they'd, I don't know, emotionally and physically prepared.
Yeah, and I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but I mean, nowhere in the Bible does it say for you not to smoke marijuana.
Sweet.
Right?
Well, it says body's a temple. And I guess, but smoking.
But marijuana is good for you.
That's
so,
true too.
You know, it's kind of helping your temple. It's not destroying it. Unless you talk about like current carcinogens and all that, then in that case, you do like a vape pen or you do edibles.
Yeah.
But there's nothing technically wrong with it. It's just, you know, you have these traditions. Like I grew up in the Baptist church, so they're very rigid, very conservative.
But you're not a Baptist minister.
I am a Baptist.
You are a Baptist minister. Yeah. Wow.
Well, I'm licensed through the Baptist church.
Wow.
But I'm eclectic. My views are very eclectic.
Because you already, that's pretty mind blowing with the platonic chair theory. And so you're a Baptist minister.
Yes, ma'am.
That's great. So, but you worship, you never swear, you don't.
So I do swear. So I mean, okay, we can go into actual scripture if you want. I mean, like when Jesus says to refrain from using profanity, if you look up the word profanity just means any words that you use that will make someone uncomfortable or demean them in any way, right? So if I'm in a conversation with someone and I know socially it's these are quote unquote cuss words, and actually let's even back up a little bit more. Why are these, the F word and the SH word, bad words? If you know, right? So I had a psychology teacher. He studied linguistics, and he told me a story. So I'm going to tell you this story, okay? It basically goes like this. So in England, right, because that's where English comes from. In England, before England was a country, there was two major tribes, and they were at war with each other, right? And so one of the tribes, which we can call them English, on their armor during battle, they would write on their armor, fornicate and defecate.
Huh.
Was basically meant that they were going to rape your women and crap all over your land, right?
Right, sure, sure.
So in retaliation, the other tribe wrote on their armor the same thing, but in their language, fucka and shitta.
Huh.
Right? And so, needless to say, the English tribe won. And so that became, the other tribe became the forbidden language. You weren't supposed to speak that language. Yeah. And so when you talk about like our, you know, Baptist, conservative Baptists, yeah, technically, you know, they don't cuss. A lot of Christians don't cuss, quote unquote cuss. But that's just a misconception of what, you know, profanity is.
Right.
Right. That's just the forbidden language.
Well,
so if I'm
talking, it makes sense.
So fast forward. So if I'm talking to someone and I know socially it's not acceptable to use those words, then I'm not all, you know, automatically going to use them because I know I might be profaning them. Right.
Right.
However, if I'm in a conversation and someone's dropping an F-bomb, SH-bomb, then that gives me free range to do it as well because I know it's not going to offend them.
Right. And there's also a cultural context. When I hear people, when I'm on the bus and somebody has hip-hop music on that has very bad words in it, mm-hmm. I don't say anything unless there's children. And if there's kids, I kind of put like the moral kibosh on it. I'm like, can you put your headphones on? There's kids.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just because...
Well, that's
I don't
stupid
swear
in general. They shouldn't be playing music.
Well, I don't swear in front of children because I don't think it's appropriate. I feel like these are words that we get to use when we're adults because we understand the language and we know how to use them.
Yeah.
And we know context. And so I don't want to do them in front of children.
Yep.
So that's the only reason. So it's moral. It's more like an integritous ethical stance on swear. But I swear, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, I do stand up. So I'm constantly swearing and talking about profane and ridiculous ideas.
Off top, yeah. Yeah. And when I first started doing, I've been doing comedy for about 7-8 years now.
Oh,
so
wow.
When I first started doing it, I wasn't a minister. So I, you know, my comedy is a little more raunchy. And then when I became a minister, it's like, well, okay, I should probably clean this up, you know, clean up my acts. And
sure.
It was a very difficult thing to do to, you know, not use profanity and not, you know, not go off the cuff with cuss words and even just the subject matters, you know, having to change subject matters.
Well, when you write sermons, you write a whole sermon every week, right? You write an half hour long speech?
For the most part, either I write it manuscript or I just write notes.
Because you've got a captive audience. You can, if you can write clean material, you can do a 30-minute set every Sunday. That's great.
Basically.
Twice for two different shows, 30-minute
sets. It's kind of like that, yeah.
I mean, come on, that's great.
It's kind of like
that's
yeah.
That's super cool.
I mean, but it has to come from the word, but yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I throw jokes in there.
I have tons of jokes about feminism in the Bible.
Yeah.
Ruth and Esther.
Let me hear one.
Okay. So you obviously know the book of Ruth, so I don't have to. There's two books in the Bible that are specifically named after women. And so
right.
I figure
Ruth
as a feminist,
Esther.
I should, you know, do a little study into those. So what I learned from the book of Esther is that what you have to do as a woman is have a hot rack and not look Jewy. So her name was Hadassah. They're like, oh, girl, you got to cut that out. Your name is not Hadassah. Your name is Esther. They basically put her in with the concubines of the king after he kicks out his queen Vashti because she won't dance around naked in front of his drunk buddies. And then he's like, I'm going to get another hot bitch up in my crib. And then he's like, you know, change your name. Don't be Hadassah. Be Esther. And then she saves the entire Jewish people. How? Is she good at puzzles? Is she like, she's an incredible vocalist? She's an amazing musician? No, she has a hot rack and doesn't look Jewy. That's basically what I learned from the book of Esther. Thank you, God.
Nice.
I know exactly what to do with it. I know exactly what I should do as a feminist.
That's awesome.
Thank you. See, you get it because you've read the book. So when I do that joke, if people don't have any biblical knowledge, they just look at me blankly. They're like, we don't care. We don't get it. We have no context for what you're talking about.
I wish I had that joke before I was a minister. I did a... I did a fashion show. I did a private show and I did about 15 minutes set. And I actually had dinner rolls thrown at me at this church event, you know what I mean? And I made the joke, let he who was without sin throw the first dinner roll. And like, they just came flying. I didn't know who threw them. It was an interesting moment because
that's
I'm like,
hilarious.
You guys are Christian. What are you doing throwing dinner rolls at me? If you don't like my comedy, that's one thing, but don't, you know, no, that was
wow.
funny. I guess maybe I offended them in some kind of way.
So
actually, I was a minister at that time.
Well, this is the thing that this is a strange biblical question about. Jesus gets big on people about calling someone fool.
Right.
So it's kind of like that.
Just like Proverbs too.
It's like is that like the judgiest thing you can do is to call someone else a fool or a foolish? And I'm thinking though, as comedians, aren't we playing the role of the fool, or is that linguistically different? The fool that he's talking about is not like the Shakespearean fool.
Right, right.
Which, like, so is it, which, like, what did he mean by
right.
And why did he take such like great offense about calling your, like it was in the Beatitudes, like don't ever call anyone a fool. It's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, you know, Beatitudes, that's cool.
And I'm like, really?
Yeah. Well, first off, you know, people get in trouble a lot with scripture because the danger is that the King James Version or any of these other versions, they're translations, sure. Right? So as a minister, what I usually have to do before, when I'm getting into a scripture is I have to translate it back to the original language, right? Because depending on where you are, if you're talking about Jesus, then that's the New Testament. So it was written in Aramaic and Hebrew. And so depending on, you know, what scripture it is, you have to translate it back. So that scripture, I probably have to translate it back to Hebrew just to see what word fool, because it might be two different types of fools.
Sure.
Right. And so that's number one. Number two is you remember that, you know, we have the Old Testament, the New Testament. At the beginning, God made Adam and Eve, and he made them in his image, right? So when he made them in his image, basically he made them perfect.
Sure.
Or at least as perfect as he could in the physical form. And so our goal as human beings were always to be a reflection of God and his image and almost the perfect being that he is. So when you're foolish, then you're not on the high wisdom of God. So when Jesus brings up, I'm not 100% sure, as I haven't studied the scripture, but when he talks about the fool, he's probably talking about the fool in Proverbs, because Jesus references the Old Testament a lot, right? So he's probably talking about the fool in Proverbs. When the fool in Proverbs, it's always the difference between wisdom, which comes from God, and foolishness, which is not just that you don't have wisdom, but you don't have knowledge either.
Right. Well, and there's a carelessness of thought. It's that it's foolishness is almost impulsivity, because if you were going to think about things, so it's almost like he's warning us against being.
Yeah. Think before you speak, think before you act. But not even just that, think and then also pray to God for the wisdom so that you can think clearly.
But isn't that just an argument for like meditation? So that's the thing, is
definitely,
if you're praying, like, because when I was little, I literally believed that like Jesus, 33-year-old Jesus with his little stigmata,
right,
is sitting next to me on my bed, petting my head. And I'm like, oh, the girls don't like me. And he's like, it's okay. Everything's cool. And I'm like, but I don't know why everybody doesn't like me. And he's like, if you could just shut up a little bit, people might like you a little bit more. But Jesus, I don't. He's like, nobody likes a know-it-all, Pam. Come on. You know. But the question is, as a child, was I truly... But in my belief, that was there. Like,
yeah.
But that's not, that's almost like when I was a child, I thought like a child, and now I'm a man and I put childish ways behind me.
Awesome.
And it's like, so does Jesus, I mean, that's so weird for me, because it was like, I think I was little and I believed that that was real. And now I'm an adult and I'm like, when we die, we're fucking dead. Like, that's it. There's right. there's no 12 mansions in the sky. There's no riches piling up for me.
Right,
it's
right.
kind of all here.
Yeah. Well, when I first, before I became a minister, for about 3 years, I was really deep into the word and trying to like really, get right. Well, not to say get right, just I was curious enough to really study it. Right. And so that's kind of why I prefaced at the very beginning that, you know, the word doesn't matter. It's the idea behind the word. Right. So, you know, to me, I'm praying to God, but to someone else, they're meditating to get nirvana. But I mean, or someone is speaking something into existence as well.
Right.
You talk about the law of attraction, right?
Sure.
So
sure.
if you say, I want this to happen, and you think about it in a positive way, the law of attraction says that it'll come your way.
Right.
Now, you can make those parallels, is that just the universe, you know, giving you what you asked for because you were thinking about it or saying it, because the law of attraction says you actually have to say it too.
Sure.
It's the same as prayer. It's pretty much in the same realm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is that like when you're negative and in a bad mood, people don't like you. And so you probably aren't going to get what you want.
Yeah.
Like the nicer and better. And hey, Jesus, turn the other cheek. Yeah. Stop. Instead of picking up a stick or a gun,
right,
you can like empathize and be calm, because nobody can force any reactions out of you.
Yeah.
It's how we react to the situation, and putting wisdom into your reactions. I think that's where
Yeah.
Otherwise, because if we're just being reactionary all the time,
yeah,
then what? Then
yeah. You have to respond, not react, you know, because reaction is at the very minimum level of physics, right? And we're a little bit above physics because we're able to study physics.
Right.
Unlike the trees who just adhere to physics and they can't do anything about it.
Right. Yeah, you don't.
Yeah, they can't study physics.
You don't feel the wind, you hear the tree.
Yeah.
So how old are you? Are you 33? You're a little older. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'm in my 30s.
Oh, yeah, because Jesus did all his ministry in his 33rd year, and I think that's very interesting, specifically that it was just this one year.
Oh, crap,
and it's 33 is this great kind of thing. So my boyfriend just turned 33, and I wanted to have, because he's also very religious, and I wanted
so
to have...
So he's religious, which you're not?
No, he was.
Oh,
he's also, now he's super into punk rock, and he's like, fuck God.
Punk rock is dope.
Yeah.
I love
but,
punk rock.
So for his 33rd birthday, I wanted to have a party, and he's like, I don't want a party. So I was like, fuck. But I came up with the ideas for it. It was going to be all Jesus themed. So I was going to make one called Pearls Before Swine, and they were going to be little pearl onions wrapped in bacon, and then like with some herbs. So like with herbs. So like I take like a rosemary and stick it through the pearl onion and then roast it and then put some bacon around it. And so that would be one, Pearls Before Swine.
Okay.
And I wanted them all to be biblically themed. So I wanted to do 5 loaves, 2 fish. And so I'd wanted to do 2 fish in a salt crust, where you take the whole fish and you put it in the salt crust and then you make it look like a fish on the outside and you crack it open and have like, and bake a bunch of fresh bread, like 5 loaves. I just thought it would be really cute, right? To have like a Jesus themed 33rd birthday party food thing. And he was like, that's really darling, but we don't have that many friends and nobody will get it. Like, they'll be like, why are you? And for a week I was like,
she
trying to come
me.
Up.
I would've got
like, it. Yeah. Jesus themed food. It's really funny because of all the parables. It's like the seeds in the, don't you know, the seeds in the rocky path. You plant your seeds. You don't just, it's the same thing. He talks a lot about restraint. You don't just throw your seeds willy nilly wherever and go, well, I hope something grows.
Yeah.
You have to take the seed, nurture the seed, maybe even germinate it first. You gotta nurture the soil. You gotta build your little, do the whole thing. Plant it, put on the fertilizer.
Don't throw it on rocks.
Yeah, don't. Why would you have expectations of anything? I really love the parables because I love allegories, and I think any fables being told as like, I feel like that's what's wrong with kids these days, is we're not teaching them moralistic anything. It's like Disney is teaching them morals,
right,
which is terrible. We don't want, why are we giving Disney all the power over shaping our children?
Yeah.
Where it's like, but the parables and allegories, it's great stuff,
good,
you know,
stuff,
like the, you know, don't build your house in a sandy land. Don't build it too near the shore.
And that's one of the reasons why Jesus spoke in parables, because it helped people unlock their minds, you know, metaphors and all that. Just the beauty of linguistics. That's what I really love. I teach a public speaking class and a writing class, like 5 or 6 hours a week. And
cool.
Yeah, I try to let them know about similes and all that stuff. And it's interesting to see how kids, you know, they, somewhere in their brain, they get it, right? But they can't put it into words what they understand or what they get, right? And so, you know, you bringing that up is that makes a lot of sense. And it, even just, you know, I'll have kids. Do you have kids?
No.
Okay. Well, I hopefully, you know, I don't know, one day I'll have kids, or maybe not. I don't really care at this point. But, you know, yeah, so kids, like, one thing that I want to do is I don't want them to be in the school system, because I feel like,
yeah,
like it's a babysitting system, right? Yeah,
absolutely.
That's kind of where it came from. When the Industrial Revolution hit, all of a sudden now people are going to work 9 to 5, whereas prior to that, people owned a farm or they owned a business,
right,
and they just worked whenever, you know? And so when they were in the factory from 9 to 5, couldn't leave, the kids needed something to do. So that's where K through 12 came about.
Wow.
And so I've been teaching for about 6 or 7 years as well. And the first time I started teaching, I was like, why are we teaching these kids these outdated things?
Right.
You know, it really,
we're teaching to the test, which is so dumb when no child
they're
left behind.
They're not comprehending anything.
No, they're not, because they're not, there's no critical thought.
No.
I thought that George Bush's, I was a credentialed school teacher from 97 to 2001.
Right.
And I got out because I saw what No Child Left Behind was bringing in.
Oh,
and
really?
That was taking away critical thought. Everything went from
test taking.
It went to test taking.
Wow.
And fill in the blank and fill in the simile. This is to this, is this, is to this. You know, that kind of stuff. As opposed to reading a story and
and considering the themes and applying those themes to your own life, or right. like all of that was just wow. gone. Creative yeah. writing, gone.
Yeah, I graduated 04, so I probably saw the tail end of that. But yeah, when I was in high school, I went to a pretty cool high school. So shout out to James Logan in Union City. It's a college preparatory school. So they still made us do that. And I had a really hard time. Like I was telling my kids the other day, like I had a hard time understanding English just because I was a mathematical thinker, and everything you just said about like analyzing themes, it just didn't make any sense to me because in math, there's always one answer.
Right.
But when you're reading a book, there might be multiple themes, and I right. couldn't grasp the concept of there being more than one theme.
Sure.
But it really helped me when I figured it out in college. Really, my mind just opened up,
right.
and just I started seeing things from different perspectives.
Exactly. I think that the only thing that's going to save the world right now is fiction, stories, literature. Is good literature written about people.
Who writes good literature anymore?
Well, I think that I think that Stephen King is going to be known as one of the literary greats one day because his short stories are really incredible. But when you are writing in even a first person narrative, and it's somewhat like Stephen King can write from a woman's perspective and he does it amazingly. He can write from like a racist's perspective and it's totally great. He can write from a misogynist perspective. He can write from a crazy person's perspective.
He wrote a lot of books.
He's written, oh my God, he's written like
crazy.
So many novels, and then all the short stories and everything. It's mind blowing. But I think that's what can save. The reason that why can't we just all get along? Mm-hmm. Is that we are unable to empathize with one another. And
right.
one of the ways that we can teach empathy is through fiction.
Off top.
Because when people are reading a story, mm-hmm. you get that intimate, like you're the character.
Right.
It's your brain, or you're there as you, but you're also there as what the author wants you to do.
Well, frig, it's also a dangerous situation now, because I don't know if you heard, but like kids have like iPads and laptops in school now. So now they're still reading, but they're reading pixels. Oof. Right? So what happens is with your brain is that, you know, you have two hemispheres of your brain. The pixels only activate one side of your brain.
Oh.
Right? Whereas when you read actual print, there's actual ink, right? And so
right.
your brain is picking up not only just the words, but the calligraphy of the words.
Sure, the font.
And yeah, the actual font. And so you use both hemispheres of your brain.
Sure. Well, because it's a picture. It's either a letter is one symbol that is a picture. It's a picture symbol. And when you're reading it on a screen, it's 100 tiny little blips of light that become a letter.
Yeah.
It's like instead of one image, it's multiple images being one image. It's pretty mind blowing.
Yeah, it is mind blowing, and that's one of the reasons why I think kids don't want to read anymore. They're kind of gravitating towards looking at video or looking
right.
at film.
And it's vapid consumption of images. See, that's a problem I have. Is that?
But they're smart as hell.
I know, but they need. But we can teach them when they make pictures in their own head. That's only going to make them smarter.
Right.
Like the idea that TV and movies and visual images are what they kind of gravitate towards. Mm-hmm. That's because it's easy. Mm-hmm. Because when you read a book, you have to take those little symbols and you have to put those symbols into words. And then you have
right.
to think, oh, what does that word mean in which language? And what does that mean? And then you put them in sentences and then they create pictures in your head.
Yeah.
There's a lot of higher order fucking thinking going on when you're reading.
Yeah.
You know? And so that we're losing that.
Yeah.
And that's scary. And then we wonder why kids don't care. We wonder why we have a president who watches TV all day and doesn't read books and doesn't actually study. Because why would... Because I already know everything. We don't. They're so...
So you're not a Trump supporter?
Oh, God. Well, how could I be? How could anybody in California be? Are you?
I like to think of myself as a Trump empathizer.
An empathizer?
Yeah, I'm not 100% a Trump supporter, but I do empathize with him.
But he's an egotistical maniac. He's out of control.
Most guys are, you know. I mean, I don't know. I guess I've...
But Obama wasn't. He was so humble.
Obama was an actor. He was the best actor we've ever had as president.
You think so?
He should have got an Oscar.
But he's a constitutional lawyer.
Yeah, lawyers are actors, right?
Yeah, like, but I
believed him. I believed everything he said. I
definitely
believed his
I
wife.
Did too.
I believe his children.
I did too.
I
know
him.
I voted for him the first time just to say that I voted. So first of all, I don't actually believe in democracy. So
what do you mean?
I don't believe democracy. You know, I going back to Plato. Plato said democracy can never work
because we as people are too stupid.
Yeah,
because
dumb people are going to vote for dumb people. So,
right.
You know, the
because it's a popularity contest. Because democracy is a popularity contest.
At the end of the day, yeah. I mean, it's supposed to be for the people, but I mean.
So, what do you want? An aristocracy? Do you want to get back to kings and queens? Or
No. So Plato actually mapped out this government that has never been implemented.
Oh.
And the reason it can't be implemented, because it kind of probably needs to start at the very beginning of time, I think. So he basically said the perfect city state or perfect government is the same as a perfect human being, right? So a perfect human being needs to have his rational, righteous mind controlling the irrational spirit, which controls the weak body.
Okay.
So he said as a city state needs to be the same way. We need to have the, not just the smartest, but righteous as well. You have to be righteous as in righteous and just.
Who decides who's right? Because
that's the hard part.
Because when the righteous people are usually self-righteous and we're like, fuck you. And then they're hypocritical as fuck.
And the righteous ones, you don't even know that they exist because they're so humble.
Right. Exactly. Because they have quiet integrity and they don't wave it up in the air and go, look at me, look at, I just tipped $20 or, you know, like what I just gave up, like Jesus in the church or whatever. I just gave $100 to the church. It's like, give quietly, give of your heart. don't give seeking reward. But now it feels like people only give seeking reward. But then, how do you measure righteousness?
That's the hard part. That's probably why the government has never been implemented, because it has to start at the beginning of time, right? So how do we change our government to that government? I thought it'd be a very difficult process. But to finish, just so the righteous, rational thinkers needs to control the irrational army, which controls the masses of people who really deep down in their heart just want to be told what to do, which is like 90% of the population.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, but I never want to be told what to do. I hate
that. So you're probably part of the 10% that doesn't, you know?
That's in charge.
Yeah, the righteous and rational. Yeah, you're technically,
But I'm a woman, so at the time, he was only talking about men.
At the time,
because
yes.
Women didn't even have, we weren't even people.
Yeah. Technically. Yeah. And then his protege, Aristotle, said that you're not a perfect, he went a step further and said you have to be a man to be a perfect human being. You actually have to be a man, you have to be tall, you have to be rich. I think that was, and you have to be attractive.
But rich in spirit is different than actual money. How important is money to you? Just that's a random question, but
how
it goes to people.
How important is money to me?
Yeah.
I don't really like money. I don't really.
Well, on a scale from like it's just little pieces of paper that float through my hands, and you're just like blah, blah, to like I save and I'm totally saving up for this, or I've got like you know like every penny I'm accounting and my checkbook is always balanced.
So yeah, a little bit of history of me. So I went to school for economics and accounting.
What?
Yeah. but I always had theater in my heart, right? So I did theater on the side, you know, and I ate up a lot of my units doing theater, which I shouldn't have done, but I enjoyed it. And then once school was over, to keep my acting chops going, I started doing comedy, and then I started getting a fan base, and I said, oh, well, I'll just keep doing this thing. But so my day job, what I do during the day, is I am a financial broker. So,
whoa.
Yeah, mind blowing. I do so many things, right?
But being a minister isn't a day job?
No, that's a life job. That's people call me in the middle of the night to go pray for their sick aunt who's in the hospital.
Whoa.
So, you know, that's 24/7.
But it doesn't pay you enough that you can just be a minister.
No.
That is so sad that you've dedicated your life to the church and you don't, do you get a free place to live?
No. Pro
what
bono.
Do you get out of it? You're a pro bono
spiritual,
minister?
Spiritual compensation.
You're a pro bono minister. I thought that the whole point of like being a minister or being a priest or whatever is that you got free room and board.
That's the problem. What? That's the problem.
I don't get it. That's because people think that?
Yeah,
because
people think that. I mean, Jesus wasn't poor. Like, we have this image of him being poor, but he wasn't poor. He just always, people always gave him stuff from birth. They gave him gold and a bunch of crap, right? So he was always well off. He would preach that it's, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It's meaningless. But it does. So that's why you ask, how important is it? It's like, well, in the world that I live in, it's a 10 out of 10. Ooh. But, you know, I don't care for it that much, but it is important because you have to live and survive. So it's somewhat important. I wish it wasn't so important in the world, but it is. So in my own life, is it important? Yes, but I wish it wasn't, you know? So I don't know. It's interesting. So as a financial broker, yeah, so I have a lot of clients, and I got to say, I have to be confidential with this stuff, but, basically, yeah, I teach them on how to save properly and how to invest properly. And there's certain things that you just have to do, that the rich fat cats are doing right now. You know, when Trump said, I don't pay any taxes, you know why he doesn't pay any taxes? Because there's certain accounts that you can put your money in that's completely tax-free, which is what I teach my clients to do, which is what I do. Right. So, I mean, I know the rules. I don't quite believe in the rules, but they are the rules. You know, right, what I'm saying? If I have to play basketball, then I might as well play it the best I can and know all the rules.
That makes sense. See, I think that money is what is tearing us apart, and that is what is absolutely wrecking humanity, is that especially as Americans, we feel like people only have worth and value that's associated with dollar bills.
Right.
And when you say
it's
worth
really
and when you say value and when you say values and these kinds of things, they should be esoteric. They should be part of your, we don't believe in a soul anymore. There should be integrity. That's like the whole thing that's been making me crazy is when little kids are like, fake it till you make it. I'm like, no, learn, practice, do, practice, discipline, practice, learn.
But look how many people are financially successful from just faking it. I mean, I do hip hop, and like in the hip hop industry right now, it's like you don't even have to be a good rapper anymore.
Yeah.
You just have to just look like you have a lot of money and look like you know, and do something that's extreme, like dye your hair a rainbow color or something like that, and then have a crazy social media presence, and then you can be a successful rapper nowadays.
Wow.
You know, it's very, is it, you know, it is what it is, you know.
I get it. I mean,
this way. Back to what you're saying though, the Bible actually doesn't say money is the root of all evil.
It does. Who came up with that?
It actually says the love for money is the
root. Okay.
So that's why the world is where it is, because people are in love with money and not in love with themselves or God. They're in love with money.
But it's also that people are judging each other based on how much. People who don't have enough money aren't people.
Right.
Like when Trump says that he wants to give everyone on food stamps drug tests. Excuse me? Like, what are you? Or that everyone on food stamps is going to get now like a box of food, like so they like they're not worthy enough to make their own choices.
He's saying lately,
but it's like it's saying that these people over here, these poor people, they're not smart enough or good. Because if they were smart and good at what they did, they'd be rich by now.
I don't know if that's what he's saying.
I think people aren't people because they can't buy. Because if you're a good American, you're a consumer and you buy. And what makes you a good American is by buying things. In being a part of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And our government does not respect esoteric gifts. They do not appreciate artists.
Right.
And,
yeah,
you know,
artists getting out of the school system now.
And now it's saying that hip hop, saying, yeah, dye your hair rainbow colors and say bitch a lot and look like you have money. And now you're a hip hop artist. You're an artist.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you say that. But, but here's what I think Trump was trying to say. Because when I first went, when I first went to school in college, you know, I came from, you know, I went to a high school that was near Oakland in San Leandro. And so I went to Logan first 3 years. And my last year, I went to San Leandro. And before that, I hung around a lot of people from Hunters Point.
Oh, yeah.
And so I kind of got turned out in a way where I was like, oh, man, F everything. And like my whole demeanor changed. Everything, you know, I was hanging around certain type of people that were just, you know, ghetto or a hood or whatever you want to call it. Right. And so. I remember when I first got my financial aid check, right? Because it was from the state of California, right? Free money. I went to the mall and bought clothes, right? I know a couple guys who bought Jordans, you know, $200 shoes, you know? Yeah. And so what Trump is trying to say is that there are people who do abuse the system. I was one of them. I abused the system. And I know a lot of people who still abuse the system. People who don't really need food stamps, but still, you know,
but
take them.
Everyone should have access to food.
That's true. But I mean, he's saying, then food is one thing, but if you're giving someone money and then they go use it for drugs.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Right? Then I think that's what he's trying
to say. But with food stamps, you can only buy food. I mean, unless you sell them illegally to someone, be like, I'm going to take you food shopping.
Yeah, but some people do that, yeah.
You can buy $30 on my food stamps, but give me $20 worth of drugs or whatever. I'm not sure how people work that kind of stuff. But I mean, I'm on food stamps.
Yeah.
And I say there's no shame in the game. If you're like, I'm an artist and I don't get paid a lot of money. So
I
feel like I deserve to eat food.
For real, I feel you. I feel you. So yeah, that's why I go back to the I'm a Trump sympathizer. I'm not really a Trump supporter, but I am a Trump sympathizer because at one point in my life the media ran my name through the mud.
Really?
Yeah. So there's.
Will you talk about that? What happened?
I don't really like talking about it, I guess it's time.
What do you mean? You got publicly slandered?
All right, so here's the story, I guess. This is my first time really saying this publicly, and so everyone's probably gonna hear this. And yeah, if you Google Juan Rubin, Jawaan, last name Rubin, Rubin. By the way, my last name is Rubin, which is a Jewish name for Ruby, or Yiddish for Ruby. My first name is Arabic, so I'm actually the peace of the Middle East.
Right, cool.
Because there will never ever be an Arabic first name and Jewish last name ever. And my dad didn't know that. But anyway, so if you Google my name, Juan Rubin. So what happened was my sophomore year in high school, what had happened was that I was on the basketball team. I was on the freshman basketball team my freshman year, and I was balling out of control. I averaged about 30 points a game. And
damn.
Yeah, I was kicking ass. I was all over the place. And then, so my sophomore year, there's a little issue. My dad didn't like the coach at that time. I don't know. Do you know anything about LeVar Ball?
No.
Okay, never mind. Okay, so anyway, so my dad didn't
follow the Warriors.
Yeah, my dad didn't like the coach because of something. My brother was there 4 years before me, and you know, he had held on to some of his letters from different colleges because my brother was getting approached by different colleges, and the coach held on to the letters, didn't give it to him until like the end of his senior year. By then, it's like,
late.
Yeah, too late, you know. And so my dad was really mad at him, and so I didn't want to go to that school for that purpose.
Sure.
I was like, can I go to a different school? Since you don't like him, why would you send me to a school that you don't like the coach, whatever. So anyway, my freshman year, I'm playing on the freshman team and I'm scoring 30 points a game, you know, doing my thing. And then next year, I got asked to go to the varsity tryouts. And then the first day they sent me to the JV tryouts the next day. Right. And so from that, so when I told my dad that, you know, he got pissed off.
Because he wanted you to just be on varsity. Cause
yeah.
You're good. Yeah, you should be a sophomore. You should play. Yeah.
Yeah, he got pissed off. There was a lot of politics involved. But he got pissed off. And then long story short, he told me not to go to the JV tryouts. And I'm like, you know, in my heart, you know, I'm a 15-year-old kid.
I just want to play basketball.
I just want to play. I don't really care where I'm playing. You know, if that's the case, if he doesn't feel I'm good enough, whatever. But I didn't speak up for myself. I was a really quiet kid when I was younger. So I didn't really speak up for myself. I went to the JV practice, and my dad found out, and then he got mad and told me to come back. So I had to leave within 10 minutes or whatever. So he got really pissed. Anyway, so 2 days later, you know, I'm walking to class at school, and you know, everyone's approaching me like, hey, you know, what your dad sued the school?
Whoa.
And I'm like, what? So I'm like, no, I don't think so. So it was all in the newspaper, in the local news, and the story got so big that it ended up on HBO with Brian Gumbel.
What?
I mean, the story got huge. And then I remember this is pre-Google, right? Then Yahoo was still the search engine, right?
Wow.
And so my junior year,